Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thanks for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. It's December 11th, 2019, and as we edge towards the end of the year, I want to say a special thank you to all of you who've been following along on the live stream here on Facebook, or also those catching the recordings on our YouTube channel or on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. But especially I want to thank you, and this is the season for Thanksgiving and looking back on the year, thank those who've made our newsletter, SMIE Consulting's All the SMIE News Fit to Share, a success this year. It's really made a difference seeing those subscriber numbers grow, and I'm glad that that is becoming an important part of your weekly digest of news information gathering, and thank you for those who've commented about it and how relevant it is in terms of and timely it is for them to be receiving that Monday mornings in their email inbox. So thank you again for everyone who's been a part of the journey here on the Roundup, but also for the newsletter. It's always a treat getting to hear your feedback on how these two programs, the Roundup and the newsletter, impact your work in international education. So thanks again for being a part of that. I do want to start today with information that we've talked about over the last few weeks, different pieces of what Open Doors has had to say and some of the media reactions to it. So I'm hoping today we'll have a chance to look through a little bit more of an in-depth profile that I've done recently for one of my clients, IDP Connect. I've done a piece on that takes a deeper dive into what Open Doors has to offer for international educators, particularly those in international admissions in the United States. And the piece is entitled 2019 Open Doors Report and How IDP Data Reflects Past Trends and Upcoming Shifts. So what I've done with this article is taken a look at I'm trying to focus as much as we can on the positives because we know, everybody knows who's in the industry, that our new international student numbers have been declining the last 3 years and after their peak in 2015. And it's been a real struggle for many to fight the good fight on their own campuses and to do the necessary work that they need to do to bolster their institution's standing and trying new initiatives to try and improve what is going on and how your institution is being perceived overseas. Some of that's starting to work, and there's been some positives that have come out, and we've highlighted some of those here on the Roundup. But with this piece, really I focused on a lot of the positives in terms of where students are increasingly coming from, and there are a few of those, believe it or not. Of course, the media wouldn't tell you that. But we're also looking at where the growth is, and how we may be coming to the end of the decrease in new international students and maybe seeing a potential rebound in 2019's numbers. So we'll take a look at that. And what I always find fascinating with the Open Doors numbers, we all know it's a year-old data from the previous academic year, but over the past few years, IIE, in conjunction with other higher ed partner associations, has done a kind of a snapshot survey of 400 or 500 institutions in the fall to check in to see how fall enrollments are coming along this year. And though there were about 40%, about half were reporting declines for this fall, over 40% were showing increases, and the other remaining 8 or 9% were showing that they were level with the previous year. So it's a toss-up year in terms of what the final numbers will be. But certainly, there are signs. I think we're nearing the end of that bottoming out of that new international student decreases. So what are we talking about? Because it was less than 1% in the drop this past year for new internationals after a 10.4 drop last year in 2017-18. So what we're looking at overall is that the top two sending countries, China and India, still had statistical increases. Their growth of increases certainly slowed over the last 3 years. They were on an upward trajectory of 1.7 and 2.9% growth this past year. Taiwan, another one that for the past decade or so had been decreasing, has shown the third year in a row Our second year in a row, they've shown a growth rate above 4%, so that's encouraging, maybe a rebounding market. And then there are other three other top 25 sources that I think, and I pay particular attention to in this article. Brazil, with almost a 10% increase, Nigeria, almost 6%, and Pakistan, 5.6% in growth. So those three markets of the top 25, other than Bangladesh, showed the greatest rate of return and increase in their student flows to the United States in 2018-19. Now we'll go, the article goes a little bit more in depth into each of those countries to see what exactly is driving that interest there. But in terms of the other pieces of the Open Doors report that really I think are noteworthy for international educators, particularly those in admissions, is how STEM continues to dominate. We all appreciate how STEM has really kept certainly led to an increase in OPT over the last few years in terms of, and that's really where, why our overall numbers, even though they were up 0.05% overall with the fourth year in a row with over a million international students in the United States, the OPT numbers have really been the main driving force in why the overall numbers have increased, still increased despite the negative publicity generated by the current administration over its rhetoric towards immigrants and anything international. So what we see here with this, with the increase in STEM over the, and that's been obviously since STEM OPT was made reality in 2008 and then endorsed again, expanded, codified by the Obama administration in 2015-16. That the allowance of that extra 2 years of work permission has made a significant difference for a number of destination countries or source countries like India that have dominated the OPT numbers and also further on down the line the H-1B numbers in the United States. So what we see now is we do see with the predominant academic programs studied by international students. There has been a drop recently in the number of students that are pursuing business and management, and there has been an offset rise in the number of math and computer science programs. So STEM is there, and it's driving more interest, and that is kind of the saving grace of many of the U.S.'s programs that draw students to that three-year work opportunity after graduation. So that engineering slightly decreased, and that's a little bit troubling because that is a STEM program, obviously. But we see that is that it looks like maybe that's offset with larger growth than math and sciences overall. But we'll see where that takes us. But the article itself, with a focus on Brazil, Nigeria, and Pakistan, Brazil is it's not quite where it was at the peak of scientific mobility, but has. Risen back up. It's number nine overall in the top sending countries to the United States, and certainly the largest single market in South America, with more students than Colombia and Venezuela combined. That undergraduates are about a little less than half, where graduates are about 30%, non-degree about 9.4%, OPT 12.7%. So three of the four categories, with the exception of undergraduates, saw double-digit increases this past year. So for Brazilian students studying in the U.S. And then when we look at IDP Connect's data, they have data that's available to clients that they call Insights, which are surveying still called Hot Courses and Hot Courses language sites around the world, as well as IDP's own site for student-facing sites, the student prospects that are accessing their sites. In Brazil, using that IDP Insights data, prospective students from Brazil are increasingly being driven by interest in the humanities. So that's kind of the outlier, at least in terms of the top 20 sending countries to the U.S., top 25, I should say, of countries that are not as heavily STEM-focused. Health and medicine is second at 15%, and engineering is at 14.4%. So of the nearly 200,000 prospective students from Brazil that are in the IDP Connect databases around the world, that, oh, I should say 200,000 of the Brazilian students currently in IDP's network of sites do identify the U.S. as their preferred destination. So that's a significant chunk to consider. Looking at Nigeria, that is the number one market in Africa, certainly for the largest single country sending students to the United States. They have a similar distribution to Brazil, 42% undergrad, 39% grad, less than 3% non-degree, and 15.6% are OPT. There's been a small drop in undergrads this past year, less than 4%, but OPT saw grad and OPT saw jumps of 10.8% and 12.4% respectively. So the grad market's picking back up in Nigeria. There are over 29,000 Nigerians. That's up 11% in the IDP Connect Insight data. Health and medicine is the most popular field at 21.7%, and then followed by applied sciences and pure sciences. So there are 24,000 Nigerians in the IDP network that are registered interest in the United States. So that's significant. And Pakistan is probably one of those countries that you wouldn't necessarily think to be on the up, given the rhetoric around the travel bans in the first year of the year and a half, 2 years of the Trump administration. But they have come in at number 22 on the top 25 list of sending countries in open doors. Since 2011, Pakistani students have increased by 73% to nearly 8,000 enrolled in the 2018-19 academic year. Each category increased in the past year: undergrad, grad, non-degree, and OPT. Undergrads are the single largest group coming from Pakistan to the U.S. They also favor health and medicine and studies at about 30%, with applied and pure sciences at about 16.7%, engineering at 14.4%. There's over 10,000 plus Pakistani students within the IDP site family that have identified the U.S. as their preferred destination. So there's some real significant data there. And I think when you look at the breadth of IDP's student contact out there in the world through their Hot Courses site and their own site, you now have over 21 million international students using IDP's digital products to search for their post-secondary options. So from those numbers, those students using IDP platforms, approximately 16.4% of the 21 million are considering the United States. That's 3.5 million prospective students out there that are on IDP platforms. So it's interesting to see and how as a platform, as one of the leading lead generation sources for international students who are looking to study outside their home countries, particularly in English speaking destinations, IDP has really developed a credible presence, and certainly is seeing a rise in applications to the U.S. through their services, and as well as interest. So there's really some great content there, and those of you who have interest in that, I can certainly get you in touch, or you can read the article and find out how to find out more about the IDP Connect Insights data to help really get a deeper understanding of some of the destination markets that are showing significant promise for U.S. educators. So, Father Ariarty, good to see you on the show, and hope you are well. Rima, Bridget, thanks for joining as well. Hope all is well where you are, and getting ready for a pleasant holiday season coming up. Want to switch gears now and talk about a related subject, and why students study outside their home country. And there's a company that I became aware of in the last year that's based in Australia, but has offices throughout Australia and South Asia, and has put together a rather comprehensive report of students in their ecosystem that focuses not on the students before they come to the destination markets, English speaking destination markets. They focus on the outcomes, on a student's international student satisfaction with their studies. This company, Sea Turtle, is headed by Shane Dillon. He's the creator and founder of Sea Turtle. And he shared with me some of the initial data a few months ago, and they have now a public report out And certainly I posted, as with all the stories we cover here, I post the comment, post the links to those in the comments section here on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. And this is just a treasure trove of data. I had some really great comments about it so far on LinkedIn about how valuable and interesting this is. The Sea Turtle folks surveyed students that are from eight Asian countries, Vietnam, Malaysia, China, Hong Kong, India, Indonesia, Thailand, and Singapore, roughly between for their destination countries. For New Zealand, Australia, UK, US, and Canada, those five primary English-speaking destination markets. And they've got some numbers here that you can see in each country and how many institutions within each destination country were represented in the results. For New Zealand, they had 11 schools represented, Australia 44, UK 174, US 158, Canada 19. All universities, about 406 universities globally, within those five destination countries, were covered by the students that responded from these eight Asian countries. So Asia obviously is the sole focus of this report, so it's not a global perspective, but certainly for students who are from the region that supplies more than 65% of well over two-thirds of all international students coming in the U.S. and the majority of other English-speaking destination countries, with China and India obviously driving both of those. We see some really interesting findings, and these are right now, it's an enormous compilation of data here. But some of the summary findings, just in general terms, not necessarily specific to the U.S., but these are for the six main destination countries that for these eight Asian student markets, that improving career opportunities is the number one reasons why these students chose to study abroad. And again, these are students that are not in the process of going abroad. These are ones that have already finished their degrees and are now either working already or actively seeking work after graduation. That in reflecting back on their time before they chose their institutions, these graduates say that alumni provided the most accurate source of pre-departure information. And alumni who graduated more than 7 years ago feel the most positive and satisfied with their education, and they can be the best promoters for future students in terms of their overall satisfaction with their educational experience. So of these students surveyed, 71% of international alumni get a job within 3 months of graduation, 79% finding that first job, interestingly, back in their home country. So there's some real fantastic data in here. Obviously, we won't have time to go through all of it today, but it's certainly some really fascinating pieces, and particularly when you get down to individual destination markets, what those are. And they have what they call a net promoter score for both the country of education and the universities that they studied in. And on a global scale, these eight destination or source countries in Asia for the five English language speaking destinations globally, 21% for both students and, for both country of education where they did their studies and for the university specifically, were detractors that they should not be considered actively supportive of their country of education or the institution where they attended. So doesn't speak well for that. Over a fifth of universities and countries where they studied, the students in this survey were not happy with their experiences at all, would not be supportive. About 40% of in both country and university score were neutral, and about 40% in both were would be considered promoters of the country of education as well as the university where they studied. So, where the numbers here again? These are general numbers for all five destination countries, so not specific to any one college or one country yet. At this level, 44% of international alumni felt satisfied with career support from their university. So well below 50% felt they got adequate support from their the university where they study. 35% are of international alums are satisfied with their alumni support in their home countries. Now, keep in mind, international alumni is a relatively new phenomenon. So with a little over a third of international alums, when they return home, felt that there was an adequate network of their own classmates from their university that were there for them as a support network. So it's interesting to see where that happens more. And again, there's great data in here. There's roughly 162,000 international alumni that have been benchmarking their career progression and income with Sea Turtle through this project. So it's really important that I think that everybody who's involved in international student admissions, student services, career services on your campus, that the dots are connected. And that's probably the biggest takeaway from this survey for me, and has been a thought in my head for a number of years about how, frankly, disconnected in the U.S., most career services, international student services, and international admissions are from each other. There's obvious overlaps for international admissions and student services, but for between student services and career services, there's very few institutions I've found that actually have legitimate and quantifiable data on their international graduates that they can rely on, and that where they can point to services that their institution has, whether it's through their own international student services office or the university's career and professional development offices, career services offices, whatever they're called, is how disconnected they are. Obviously, with OPT and that work permission piece that has to live within the International Student Services Office or whoever the DSOs are for students, wherever they're housed on campus, the support and need for a broader professional development services, projects, interviews, resume building, all that stuff that these offices already do for domestic students and can be tailored and should be tailored to international audiences as well. Because there are obviously different sets of rules that govern what they can and can't do as international students. So this is the gap that I think most international students, when we look at the results of surveys like this from Sea Turtle, you see how where the challenges are in terms of where students can really be helped more in their experiences on your campuses. So when you have time, jump into this data, because I think it's really going to enlighten you as to some of the broader trends, particularly from students from these eight countries coming to the U.S. and other countries, and what they see as strengths, what they see as weaknesses of our education systems, and our preparation for life after graduation. So definitely check this out, because I think there's some great nuggets in here and will continue to be a source of information for me, going to be a great reference that I'll be pointing back to many times, I'm sure, over the coming weeks, months, and years. Now for our final story, Tom, thank you for joining. Hope you're well. Good to see you online here for this. For this last story, I'm turning to a related topic. When we were talking about post-study work for international students, we know what's available here in the United States with the traditional year per degree level for undergraduates, graduate students as well. But there's also the STEM OPT that gives an extra 2 years for students who have had STEM degrees in science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And we know what those numbers are and how that's helped improve and has really kept our international student numbers overall on the up since it was introduced in 2008, the STEM OPT piece. And we've surveyed almost weekly on this on the podcast, on the roundup here, a different story on post-study work, whether it's in the UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, here in the United States. We talk about it quite a bit here as an important driver, and certainly the Sea Turtle survey results that of students after graduation and what their outcomes are, they point specifically to reasons why they studied abroad to enhance their job prospects. 7 out of the top 10 reasons that Sea Turtle profiled in their survey results are employment related. So why students studied abroad. So it's no surprise then that countries that recognize that, and the U.S. has done that in the past with the introduction of STEM OPT, but other countries are doing similar things. We've seen huge jumps in interest from India and other countries for the U.K. when they reintroduced their two-year post-study work visa. And Canada has been another beneficiary, and probably more than most, Canada has seen tremendous growth over the last 3 years in their international student populations. And that's those new students that might have previously come to the U.S. have a good number of those we can feel fairly confident have gone north of the border because obviously Canada presents a much more friendly environment for international students on face value. Certainly, the one piece that they have, they offer that is a much more streamlined, much more transparent process is kind of the path to permanent residency and eventual citizenship through student visas. We covered stories last week, and we introduced the term on the roundup. It's been around in Canada for quite a few years. It's called the edu-immigrant, and that is a definite motivation for those coming, particularly from India, but other countries as well, looking to study in Canada because their entry requirements for particularly their community colleges and vocational colleges in Canada are not as strict as some of their top universities. So they are coming primarily as a way to they can work while they're during their studies off campus, but in any field, doesn't have to be related to their field of study. But they're limited to 20 hours a week to work while they're in school, and then afterwards, the length of time that a permit is valid depends on the length of the completed academic program. That's the general rule, and it's for a period of up to 3 years after their studies are complete. And their acronym for it is the PGWPP, the Post-Graduation Work Permit Program. So that's their version of OPT. So for up to 3 years, depending on their length of their academic program. So since that introduction, and this actually began in the early 2000s, it was introduced. The number of international students since that time has risen sharply. In the last decade, their international student numbers have tripled to over 572,000, according to this report. And I think this report is going to count all the vocational and community college students. It's going to count ESL students. It's going to count university level work as well. So that's a stark difference from 370,000. It's 200,000 more that is reported in the Project Atlas numbers for 2018. So that's a very significant difference. So, but what either way you look at it, particularly if it doesn't include the vocational and community college students in that overall, this number does include those students in that 572,000 number. You now see from 2005, when PGWPP was first introduced, there were 5,400 students who qualified for post-graduation work permits to over 143,000 in 2018. That's over a 25 times increase in the last 15 years or 13 years only. So when we see that kind of growth is just incredibly dramatic, and has been driven recently because of the increased numbers coming from India, which has become overtook China as the largest single source of international students in Canada. You see, particularly for, and we know we've talked about it here on the roundup, how Indian students are in many, many destination markets. Work permission is the driving force of their post-study work is the driving force of why students go. So Indian students in Canada have been booming primarily at the vocational and community college level, but to a lesser extent at the undergraduate and graduate level. So we see these increases have just been dramatic, to say the least, over a 25% 25 times growth in the number of students who were on these post-graduation work permits in the last 13 years. So, interesting conversation. I just returned yesterday evening from Board of Directors meetings for educational credential evaluators based in Milwaukee. One of my colleagues on the board, Alex Usher, who runs Higher Education Strategy Associates in Canada for institutions that are looking to develop a more robust strategies in various areas within their institutions. He was sharing with me how what Canada's done, this growth in their post-graduation work permit program up to 143,000. If that keeps going the way it is, there's going to be a tipping point where there will not be the jobs, frankly, to sustain those all these work permit holders. And what he's shared is that the immigrants and the students that have come in to Canada recently, they even the educated ones end up taking perhaps the less skilled jobs that maybe Canadians do not want to take. And I'm sure my American colleagues here could share stories that they've heard of similar things, problems, challenges with immigrant communities here in the United States, particularly those that have come here without papers. They have typically filled the jobs that no one else will take. That is happening now in Canada with their legal immigration flows, or those that come overstay visas and just get their initial jobs and kind of blend into the woodwork, so to speak. So it's a problem that if it grows much larger in Canada, particularly in the major metropolitan areas, it will be a significant challenge to the overall economy there, according to my colleague Alex Usher there in Toronto. Some of the outlying provinces and the less populated areas would still have a need, and eventually they may take the tack that Australia's had in changing their priorities to make work permission longer in less outside of the major metropolitan areas in Australia. A number of the provinces in Canada have more streamlined study to work to citizenship pathways set up now. So those in the outlying provinces that might continue to become a more popular method for students who want to study in Canada. So we'll see. But there's a lot going on there. Certainly a lot more we could talk about. But I want to thank you for joining me today for the Midweek Roundup. Thanks to those that are listening on the podcast, on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, or Google Play, or even Podbean. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and we will catch up with you next week. Have a great weekend.